I'd like to turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 45, book of Genesis, chapter 45, we'll read the first 7 verses. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried or shouted, "Cause every man to go from out. To go out from me." And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near. And he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance." What we've just read, of course, has to do with Joseph and his brothers. The final 14 chapters of the book of Genesis, Genesis from chapter 37 through chapter 50, record the story of Joseph. It is truly a remarkable story, packed with wonderful and encouraging truths about God. In the biblical record of Joseph, we see that God makes all the difference. We see that God is clearly behind the scenes, that he is in absolute control, sovereignly working all things according to his purpose. In the record of Joseph, we see that God is able to turn so-called tragedy into triumph. And God is able to use negative experiences of our life for our own good and for the good of others. Really, the story of Joseph is an Old Testament illustration of Romans 8:28. It illustrates Romans 8:28. The record of Joseph is an illustration of those two wonderful words, "but God, but God." It also serves as an the life of Joseph also serves as an illustration of the life that a child of God can and should live, because we see that Joseph was a model and an example of all areas of his life of how a child of God ought to act. We see in Joseph that a child of God can thrive and do what is right even in the most adverse of circumstances, and that even when terrible things happen to an individual, there is a proper way, a God way, to respond. And in Joseph, we see that it's possible to rise above very, very difficult and very, very challenging circumstances and experiences. We see in Joseph that we can be an influence for good and a blessing to others, even in the midst of adverse circumstances. In Joseph, we see what a person fully committed to God can be and can do. You see, in Joseph, we see that he just kept on believing, kept on trusting. He did not waver. He did not compromise. He never seemed to lose his focus upon God. The life of Joseph, like our own lives, consisted of many different circumstances, many different scenes. But whether Joseph was in his father's house, or whether Joseph was thrown in a pit, or in possession of slave traders, or in the house of Potiphar, or in prison, or exalted upon a throne, he did what was right. Joseph is truly a remarkable individual. He is the most complete type of Christ in all the Word of God. And there's many messages that can be preached concerning Joseph being a type of Christ. In our text, Joseph, of course, has been exalted to the throne. He now possesses everything that a famine-stricken people so desperately needed. And in our text, we see Joseph transforming the lives of his brothers. We want to view Joseph as Christ, and we want to see ourselves in his brothers. We have a beautiful picture of salvation here in Genesis 45, but that's not our message. The subject of the message is Jesus, the transformer of lives. And the vast majority of the message will be a summary of events leading up to our text. And I'm sure most of us are familiar with the story of Joseph leading up to our text. But we just want to summarize that. We see, first of all, the hatred and the mistreatment. Again, view Joseph as Christ. And consider the hatred and mistreatment of Joseph by his brothers. And I believe it's very important that we recognize their hatred and their mistreatment, because it manifests this fact that Jacob acted in grace and mercy toward his brothers, just as Christ does with us. We are told in Genesis 37, verses 3 and 4, that Jacob, Joseph's father, loved and favored Joseph above his brothers. And as a result, Joseph's brothers hated him. In Genesis 37, verses 5 through 11, it is recorded that Joseph had two dreams concerning how he would be exalted above his brothers, and how that his brothers would bow to him. And perhaps the mistake that Joseph made was he told the dreams to his brothers. And when they heard of the dreams, it says they hated him yet more and envied him. So their hatred and their envy was growing amongst the brothers of Joseph. There in Genesis 37, we're told one day when Joseph was 17 years old, he was on his way to the fields to see how his brothers were doing, and they conspired to kill him. But the eldest brother, Reuben, suggested that instead of killing him, let's cast him into a pit. Which, of course, they did. Joseph is stripped, cast into the pit. There's no water. His brothers sit next to the pit, and they're eating, drinking, having a good time. And some Ishmaelites pass by, and Reuben suggests, let's sell Joseph. Let's sell him to these Ishmaelites, these slave traders. The Ishmaelites buy Joseph, carry him into Egypt. And in the meantime, Joseph's brothers kill a goat, dip Joseph's coat in the blood of the goat, presented the coat to Jacob, who immediately concluded that his son Joseph had been killed by wild animals. Then the scene shifts to Egypt. In time, Joseph is sold by the Ishmaelites to Pharaoh's captain, Potiphar. We see this in Genesis chapter 39. Joseph served faithfully in Potiphar's house until one day Potiphar's wife falsely accused him, and then Joseph was cast into prison. In Genesis chapter 40, we are told that while Joseph was in prison, he interpreted the dreams of two of his fellow prisoners, a baker and a butler. And in chapter 41, we see that Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, he dreamed two dreams, and no one could interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. Pharaoh was informed that there's a man down in the prison named Joseph, and he is an interpreter of dreams. And I'm sure, Pharaoh, that he could interpret your dreams. So Joseph is summoned from the prison to the palace, and he stood before Pharaoh, and as he did, Pharaoh told Joseph of his dreams. He said, the magicians and the wise men, they're unable to explain these dreams. What do these dreams mean? Joseph told Pharaoh that the two dreams basically had the same meaning. He told him that there would be 7 years of plentifulness. Following those 7 years, there would be 7 years of famine. And Joseph then advised Pharaoh. He said, Pharaoh, it would be wise for you to choose some good men, men of great wisdom, men who have proven themselves, and give them charge of the work of storing up surplus food during the 7 years of plenty. And then have this man or these men distribute the stored up food during the 7 years of famine. And without waiting for Joseph's prediction, to see if Joseph's predictions would come true, or doubting in the least the truth of Joseph's words, Pharaoh decided to appoint Joseph to be the one who would manage all the supplies during the 7 years of plenty and during the 7 years of famine. So Joseph is now prime minister of all of Egypt. We are told in Genesis 41 and verse 46 that Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Back in Genesis 37, when he was sold, he was 17. So it's been 13 years. It's been 13 years since Joseph was sold into slavery. And now Joseph has the key to all of the granaries. Notice in Genesis 41, verses 47 through 49, we are told how that Joseph stored up the food during these 7 years of plenty. Verse 47, and in the seven plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until it left numbering, for it was without number. And then there came the time of famine. In verse 53 of chapter 41, and the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended. Remember, it's been 13 years when he stood before Pharaoh. Now 7 years of plenty has ended. So it's been 20 years. It's been 20 years since Joseph was sold by his brothers. We read in verse 54 of chapter 41, "And the 7 years of dearth," or scarcity, "began to come." This dearth or famine would devour and destroy the land. Joseph, in interpreting Pharaoh's dream, said in chapter 41 and verse 30, "The famine shall consume the land." The famine would be very painful. It would be a very agonizing time. There in verse 31 of chapter 41, it says, "For it shall be very grievous." That is, it will be very painful. It will be very agonizing. 7 years of famine. The famine, of course, resulted in great hunger. Verse 55 says, "And when all the land of Egypt was famished," or starving, it was extensive. Verse 56, "And the famine was over all the face of the earth." And the consequences of the famine were growing. Notice verse 56 and 57, "And the famine was over all the face of the earth." And then notice the last part of the verse, "And the famine waxed sore." Again, showing that it was painful and it was excruciating in the land of Egypt. And then the last part of verse 57, "The famine was so sore in all lands." So we see this famine was of wide extent. It resulted in barrenness. We see in Genesis 42 and verse 12, we read of the nakedness of the land. In Genesis 47 and verse 13, "And there was no bread in the land, for the famine was sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted, deteriorated, withered, and wasted away by reason of the famine." And in Genesis 47 and verse 20, we read, "The famine prevailed." So no doubt, this was a time of great devastation, a time of desolation, a time of great need, a time of tremendous sorrow and heartache and restlessness and futility. I'm sure it was a time when many died. It was a terrible, terrible time. But Joseph, again viewing him as Christ, is and has everything that the people needed. Without food, the people, of course, would continue to deteriorate and eventually perish. And notice what Pharaoh said to those who came to him asking of bread in verse 55 of chapter 41. "When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph. Go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, do." Joseph is Christ. And those words are still the answer today. Go unto Joseph. Go unto Jesus. And whatever he says, you do. That'll solve everything. That's the answer. That is the answer to every problem. Go unto Jesus. And whatever he says, you do. Chapter 41, verse 56, we read, "And Joseph opened all the storehouses, gave the people what they needed." In Genesis 42, the story shifts to Jacob, Joseph's father, and his sons, Joseph's brothers, who so hated him that they sold him into slavery. In Genesis 42, we see that Jacob's sons and their families, they too were experiencing the hunger and the thirst and the emptiness and the pain of the famine. And by the providence of God, Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt. Genesis 42 and verse 1. He says to his sons there in Genesis 42 and verse 1, Why do ye look one upon another? In other words, sons, you going to sit there all day? Don't just sit there. Don't give in to the famine. There's corn in Egypt. Now go. Go and buy us corn. Reading on in Genesis 42, Jacob sends his sons. He has 11 at home. But he sends 10 of them. Because he feared, he keeps Benjamin back there in verse 4 of chapter 42. Because Benjamin was now his favorite. And he feared that if Benjamin went with his brother, something might happen to Benjamin. So I'll just keep Benjamin at home. So the 10 arrive in Egypt. Notice verse 6 of chapter 42. And Joseph was the governor over the land. And he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren. He recognized them. And he knew them. He made himself strange unto them. Keep in mind, Joseph is dressed in Egyptian garb. Speaks Egyptian, and he spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. This is the first year of the famine. So it's now been 21 years since Joseph has seen his brethren. It's been 21 years since they have seen Joseph. We see that Joseph begins to deal with his brothers. He begins to test them. He does several things to see if their attitude has changed. And in chapter 42 and verse 13, we see that before that he accused them of being spies, which led them to testify, to defend themselves. Verse 13, and they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, that would be Benjamin. And one is not. One's passed on. That would be Joseph. But they don't know Joseph. So they testify that we're from a good family. We're from a family of 12 brothers. And our youngest brother, Benjamin, he's at home with our father. And the other is not. Joseph tells them, you're not allowed to return home until the youngest of your brothers comes to Egypt. He then puts them in ward for 3 days. And then Joseph would tell them, okay, you can return home, but one of you must stay, and you must bring your brother, you must bring your youngest brother to Egypt. From chapter 42, verses 21 and 22, we see that these 10 brothers began to speak to one another concerning the guilt for what they had done to Joseph, not knowing that Joseph understands every word they're saying. So you see, these brothers, for 21 years, have been living with guilt. For 21 years, they've had no fellowship with Joseph. For 21 years, they're living in guilt. It's sad, but that describes a lot of God's people today. Maybe it hasn't been 21 years for some, maybe for some it's been longer. But it's far too long, however long it's been. Unknownst to them, we see in verse 23 that Joseph could understand what they were saying. In verse 24, we see that concerning Joseph, and he turned himself about from them. That is, as they're speaking of their guilt and what they had done to Joseph, and wept. He left the room, and he wept. And he returned to them again and communed with them. And he took from them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. It works like this. You bring Benjamin, and you'll see Simeon again. And then he filled their sacks with grain, gave them provision for the way. Considering how cruelly they had treated Joseph, this is grace. He filled their sacks with grain. On the way home, they discover that not only were their sacks filled with grain, but the money that they had spent to buy the grain was in the sacks as well. That's grace. Joseph gave them the food. Joseph gave them the grain. But when they looked in their sacks and saw that their money was there, instead of rejoicing, what did they do? They became fearful. They've been there 21 years. And even when good things happen, they're afraid. 21 years they've been living with guilt and fear. They eventually arrive home. They recount to Jacob the events of the trip. They told him of the Egyptians' demand that they bring Benjamin with them on their next trip. Notice chapter 42, verse 36. And Jacob, their father, said unto them, "Me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not. Simeon is not." Remember, they had to leave Simeon behind. "And now you want to take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." Jacob is living in self-pity. But not only that, he accuses his sons. "Me have you bereaved of my sons." Which just adds to their guilt. Coming to chapter 43, the famine is in its second year. 22 years now. And it continued to grow worse. And the supply of grain was nearly gone for Jacob and his sons. Jacob requests that his sons, 9 of them, he'll keep, Simeon is with Joseph. He has every intent of keeping Benjamin behind. So he says he wants 9 of his sons to make a second trip to buy grain. Judah steps forward, makes an earnest plea. "Dad, you've got to let Benjamin go too. Because that's what this Egyptian is demanding. And Dad, I will pledge my own life as a guarantee for the safe return of Benjamin." Reluctantly, Jacob consents and entrusts Benjamin to Judah's care. These 10 arrive at the palace, still not knowing who Joseph is. From a distance, Joseph sees that they've returned, and he sees Benjamin. And then Joseph ordered that his servants prepare a meal or a feast for his brothers. These brothers, living with guilt and fear, again, Joseph's going to prepare a feast, and they begin to surmise, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? It must be because our money was returned. They're living in constant guilt, constant fear. Joseph then brought out their brother Simeon, began to inquire of Jacob's welfare. In chapter 42, verse 27 and 28, we see that the brothers of Joseph bow before him. It was at this time, there in verse 28, we see it was at this time that Joseph lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin. And he said, is this your younger brother of whom you spake unto me? And then he's overcome with emotion. And again, he leaves the room to weep. Notice verse 30, chapter 43. And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother. And he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber and wept there. The tables in the meantime were set for the feast, one for Joseph, one table for the Egyptians, the servants of Joseph, and one table for his brothers. And his brothers were set around the table in order of their birth, which again filled the brothers with fear. This is odd. This man knows the order of our birth. Joseph, again as a test, showed favoritism to Benjamin. He gave Benjamin 5 times the food. They gave all the rest. This is a test. Has their attitude changed? Or are they going to be jealous of Benjamin as they were jealous of me? Are they going to hate Benjamin like they hated me? So this was all a test. Chapter 44 opens with Joseph ordering the steward of his house to fill their sacks with food. He says, also, put my cup, the silver cup, put that in Benjamin's sack. And then in the morning, we see that the brothers were sent away. In a short while, Joseph sends his steward after his brothers to accuse them of stealing Joseph's cup. And they're brought again before Joseph. You see, through all this, Joseph is dealing with his brothers, just as the Lord deals with us. And he was dealing with them in mercy and in grace and long suffering. So there they are before Joseph. After much conversation, Joseph says, you can go home, but you have to leave Benjamin. He's going to be my servant. Joseph again was testing them. Would they be willing to leave Benjamin? Would they still be jealous and envious? Would they like to get rid of Benjamin just as they got rid of Joseph? Well, Judah, remember, Benjamin's been put in his care. He pleaded with Joseph. He said, if we don't return home with Benjamin, it'll be more than our father can take. He'll die. So I offer myself in Benjamin's place. So Joseph can see that the brothers are not envious or jealous of Benjamin. Their attitudes have changed. It's been 22 years. That brings us to our text. Coming to chapter 45, verse 1, the feelings that had been swelling in Joseph's heart are now about to burst forth. We see in verse 1 that he shouted for everyone to leave the room. And now, standing in that room, and this is how God deals with his own. Eventually it'll be just you and him. And there they are, Joseph and his brothers. His brothers who 22 years ago, because we read in our text that the famine is in its second year. It's been 22 years. These brothers who had so wickedly and so maliciously sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites, there they stand with Joseph. They still do not know who he is. In their minds, he's an Egyptian. We read in verse 1, Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. Verse 2, we read that Joseph wept so loudly that it could be heard throughout the palace. And in verse 3, and Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Can you imagine? I am Joseph. This was a private revelation. This was a very passionate revelation. I am Joseph. This was a very powerful revelation of his person. And there they stand, absolutely stunned. Because we read also in verse 3, and his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. They are guilty. They know they're guilty. And they don't know what Joseph is going to do. They don't know what Joseph is going to do to them. He says, I am Joseph. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near. Come closer. Come closer to me. We then read in verse 4, they came near. So there they are. Not only in the presence of Joseph, but they are close to Joseph. They are now in a place where they can be blessed beyond measure. And now with his brothers close to him, he speaks again. He says, I am Joseph. And notice what he says. At first he simply said, I am Joseph. But this time he says, I am Joseph, your brother. That speaks of relationship. But he is confronting them with their sin. I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. This, of course, would cause great distress of Saul. But what did Joseph do next? Well, he took from them the burden of blame. Verse 5, he says, be not grieved. You see, he took the blame off of them. This is grace. This is mercy. And he completely forgave them. 22 years he has been away from his father. 22 years he's been away from his family because of what his brothers did. And he forgave them. Oh, there's many messages here about reconciliation between people. But that's not our point today. But this is grace. Where did they experience this? When they drew near. When they drew near to Joseph. It was there that they found the assurance of forgiveness. It was there where they felt the weight of sin. 22 years of guilt rolled away. It was in the presence of Joseph. In verses 7 and 8, he gives them the assurance that he's there to save their lives. And he gives them the assurance, he says, I am ruler throughout the land of Egypt. You see, it is near to him that you find assurance. It is near to him that you find assurance of who he is. I am ruler. It's when we draw near. And it's as we stay near that we have that assurance of who he is. He then instructs them in verses 9 through 11. Paraphrasing, he says, now hurry. And go back to my father and tell him that I am Lord of all Egypt. And tell him that I am inviting him to come unto me. And you tell him that I have provided a dwelling place for him. And you tell him that there are 5 more years of famine for him to come to me. And I will nourish him. I will take care of him. In verse 12, he again gave them assurance and certainty. He says, your eyes see. It is my mouth that speaketh unto you. You can see with your own eyes. It's me. It's Joseph. You have heard with your own ears. So they had the assurance that indeed it is him. It is Joseph. And then notice verse 15. And after that, his brethren talked with him. And oh, if we could only listen in on that conversation. 22 years. And his brethren now talked with him. Where is it that we experience that? When we draw near. When we draw near to our Joseph, we too can talk with him. Joseph then loaded them down with provisions for the return of Canaan and for the return back to Egypt. He loaded their mules with provisions. He loaded wagons with provisions. He gave them changes of clothes. And he instructed them when they got to Canaan to bring their families back to Egypt. And notice verse 20. It says, when you get to Canaan and when you're getting ready to come back to Egypt, regard not your stuff. Oh, there's a message there. Again, it's not our intent to preach it. Regard not your stuff. What is he saying? He says, you don't have to pack. Because when you get here, all the good of the land is yours. In other words, I'll take care of you. Don't you worry about your stuff. I'll take care of you. They didn't need to concern themselves. All the things that we concern ourselves with. This was another part of the experience of being near him. We have the assurance that he'll take care of us. We then read in verse 24 of chapter 45, and they departed. And they departed. They depart quite differently than when they arrived. Their lives have been transformed. Their lives have been changed. They now make their way back through famine-stricken country to Canaan. The land has not changed. The land is still bare. Things are dying. But they have changed. Their attitude has changed because they've had a personal experience with Joseph, our Christ. As they make their way back to Canaan, the guilt and the burden of sin has been lifted. It's gone. Fear has been removed. Their hearts are overflowing with peace. Their hearts are overflowing with assurance and strength, contentment. They have courage, joy, and optimism. You imagine, they're making their way back, about 260 miles. Making their way back, they have all these provisions. You're living in a famine-stricken land. It's a miracle of God that they weren't robbed. It's a miracle. That's God's watch care. But I believe as they made their way back, they had no fear at all. There was no fear in their hearts. There was joy. They had a new purpose in life. They had a new zeal. They have an entirely different attitude, an entirely different outlook upon life. And all that we would look always. Remember verse 1 of our text, Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. We need to always be looking for that. For Jesus to step in wherever we are and make himself known unto us. That's the beginning of the transformation of lives. And then we need to always be listening for that blessed voice, I am Jesus. Remember all the times you've heard that? I'm Jesus. You may find yourself in adverse circumstances. You may find yourself in the midst of a famine. And oh, what joy when you hear those words, I am Jesus. Come near. Come near to me. I believe Jesus speaks those words every single day. We don't always hear them. But I believe every single day. As a sinner, as a child of God, wanders further from God, here he is, he meets them in their path, and he says, I'm Jesus. Come near to me. And they just keep on walking. I am Jesus, come near to me. And like Joseph's brothers, they came near. We need to do the same. That's the answer. That's the answer. That's how we get through life. Drawing near to Christ. That's what gives us strength for the way. That's what gave them the strength to walk all the way back, to get all the way back to Canaan. Joseph made himself known unto his brethren and said unto his brethren, I am Joseph, and I'm so glad that Jesus still steps into our lives and speaks and shows himself to us.
And He still steps into our lives. And He still says to us, come near to me. Oh, but I've done terrible things. They sold their brother into slavery. And Joseph says, come near to me. I forgive you. I forgive you. There is forgiveness today in Christ Jesus. That's where we find forgiveness. In our Joseph, we have forgiveness with God through Joseph. And how ready we ought to be to forgive. If we've been so forgiven, who are we not to forgive someone else? Oh, but they've done terrible things. Certainly not worse than what you and I have done to our Joseph. Oh, this is a wonderful story of grace. It is a wonderful story of mercy. It is a story of how lives are transformed through an experience with Joseph. If you're here and lost today, this is the answer. I pray that one day it'll just be you and Jesus. And He reveals Himself to you. And He confronts you with your sin. And you're as low as you can possibly get. And He says, come near to me. That's salvation. And then you and I, as children of God, we get away from God. And we need to experience this over and over and over and over again. Why would any child of God spend a day, 2 days, weeks, months, and years away from God when all along the way there He is saying, I am Jesus. Come near to me. Come near to me. You don't have to live with the guilt. You don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live without fellowship with our Joseph. Our lives can be transformed. He's the answer. He is the answer to the problems today. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse of song. Let's all stand.